Last week, Utah's new professional hockey team got the first look at their new home, at least their home for now. 17 players and their families and staff of the former Arizona Coyotes were greeted by 12,000 fans at the Delta Center. The sports reporter Ian Mendez of The Athletic described the scene as a remarkable turn of events for players who had been feeling abandoned and neglected. But one of the questions hanging out there is whether Utah can sustain that kind of enthusiasm for the long haul. But it shouldn't be a surprise that there actually are hockey fans here in the state. We have the Grizzlies, a minor league team, and Dave Suter says we have a legitimate tradition to draw on. Suter is a hockey fan, put it that way, kind of an amateur hockey historian. He's working on a book about the Salt Lake Golden Eagles of the International Hockey League, which Dave told us in their heyday were outselling the Jazz. This part of the story begins with a man named Dan Meyer. He wanted to bring a team to Utah, and Dave says in 1968, he got his wish.
Just about ready to drop the puck, the Salt Lake Golden Eagles and the Atlanta Knights. And before we get started, let's take a look quickly at the standings in the IHL.
It was good timing for him because Salt Lake County had plans to build what was originally called the Salt Lake Civic Auditorium, and then, of course, it got nicknamed the Salt Palace. So the Golden Eagles are ready to play. I remember going to the very first game. I was 11 years old. I'd never seen a hockey game live, ever. And they played the San Diego Gulls, and they won by a score of, I believe it was 4-2. And I fell in love with the game at that point. So the Golden Eagles became very, very popular. And for the first 3 years of the team, they struggled, but they were successful in capturing the attention of the Salt Lake and Utah sports fans. Hockey was brand new, I think, and it was exciting. And I think Dan ran the club very well. He did some great promotions. And the Salt Palace fans were hooked.
And the puck controlled by the Golden Eagles right now. In goal for Salt Lake, Andre Trefilov.
In the late 70s and early 80s, I don't think Salt Lake was really what you'd consider a major league sports town the way it's becoming today. The Utah Jazz had just moved here in 1979, and it took a while for fans to gravitate toward the Jazz because they were brand new and because they really didn't have a very good team. They didn't draw very good crowds at that time, and oftentimes the Golden Eagles outdrew the Jazz. And so, in my mind, the Golden Eagles were kind of at the top of the heap.
Gretzky tips at the center. Kevin Wartman, an outstanding young defenseman for Salt Lake, plays it ahead, and that's a two-line pass.
In 80 and 81, the Golden Eagles made the Central Hockey League playoffs and won the championship 2 years in a row, and all those playoff games were sellouts. And I think, you know, whatever fan base we have today, it was really boring during those early days of the Salt Lake Golden Eagles, with hockey being so popular back then.
The referee tonight is Derek Martin from Chicago, Illinois, and the linesmen this evening are Patrick.
In the 1971-72 season, that was the third season, and it looked like they had a chance of making a playoff run. So Dan Meyer was attending the National Hockey League All-Star Game in Minneapolis in February of 1972. And sadly, Dan died under mysterious circumstances. He was in his hotel room, several floors up in Minneapolis, when apparently he crashed through a window on the outside of the hotel and fell to his death. Chairs had been turned over. There was obviously some sort of a struggle that had occurred. Dan's eyeglasses were found on the floor of the hotel room, broken. His wallet was found laying on the floor with money in it, so they didn't think that robbery was really the motive. A lot of people feel like maybe Dan had some debts that got him into some sort of trouble. Dan's death was ruled a suicide at that time. Very sad story. and it shocked the entire hockey world. Dan's wife became the owner of the team, but she didn't want to hang on to the club. So during the summer of 1972, the Golden Eagles were purchased by Charles Finley, who owned the Oakland A's Major League Baseball team, and he also owned the California Golden Seals of the National Hockey League. And they did very well, and they made the playoffs the next two seasons. Their play improved on the ice, and the fan enthusiasm continued.
Cutting in, Rayom knocks the puck right back to Gillingham. Count the goal. So Gillingham makes the man.
The energy in the Salt Palace during the Golden Eagles playoff years was just something else. The crowd was very loud. Every seat was full. When the Golden Eagles came out onto the ice, the fans were cheering, giving the team a standing ovation. They had a group of fans called the Red Bell Roto-Rooters. And there was a bar in Salt Lake called the Red Bell Lounge. And a group of people that frequented that lounge would come over. And they had a guy named Bobby McComas who would run up and down the steps between the sections of the Salt Palace and lead really the whole Salt Palace in cheers. Eagles, Eagles, fight, fight, fight. And this would go on for a minute or so. It was just something that you don't see as much anymore. You don't see people running around doing that sort of thing, but you sure did back then. It was very rambunctious. When the Golden Eagles won their Adams Cups in the Central Hockey League, they won them all at home on Salt Palace ice. And I remember one playoff, there were a few fans that jumped down onto the ice running around. I think the security people tried to keep them from crowding the ice too much. It was something that I'll always remember just because they had sellout crowds to win the SAC.
While the Eagles already have the 2-0 lead and have a great opportunity to build on that here with the two-man power play.
When you win, you'll attract more fans. And the Golden Eagles won a lot back in those days. So in the late 80s and early 90s, Larry Miller, the former owner of the Utah Jazz, decided that he needed to build a basketball-specific arena, which became the Delta Center. And his plan was to move the Golden Eagles out of the Salt Palace and over to the Delta Center. And I think that kind of turned a lot of fans away. And the Golden Eagles didn't seem to enjoy the same kind of success. And Larry Miller, he decided to sell the Golden Eagles to some Detroit investors, and the franchise ended up moving to Detroit to become the Detroit Vipers in the International Hockey League. And that was the end of hockey for at least one season until the Utah Grizzlies moved here.
Hello, Utah!
I don't think Utah ever fell out of love with hockey. I strongly feel that the National Hockey League team that Utah has now will be very well supported.
How about this? Haven't even played a game yet, and we've got our first sellout!
I went to that Meet the Team celebration the other night at the Delta Center, and it was a packed house. And when the team was introduced, they received a standing ovation, very energetic, and I think the reception that the team received was probably overwhelming to them. It was really something, and I think that Utah hockey fans are very enthusiastic about getting a National Hockey League team.
And no team in the NHL works harder than this whole group right in front of me. Give it up!
The thing I think people don't understand is they assume that Utah hockey fans are just Utah Grizzly fans, but I think it goes way beyond the Grizzlies. There's a lot of fans that are fans of the National Hockey League and have their favorite NHL team. I mean, I see cars driving around town all the time that have Detroit Red Wings stickers in the windows or Toronto Maple Leafs or whatever it is. And so I know there's a huge following for NHL hockey, and because of that, I think the NHL will be a solid success here in Salt Lake.
Dave Suter. He's working on a book about the Salt Lake Golden Eagles. When we come back from a break, we'll talk about this new era of professional hockey in Utah. So Utah has a new NHL franchise, and today on the program, we're talking about professional hockey in Utah. Brian Smith, the owner of the Utah Jazz, managed to close the deal to buy the struggling Arizona Coyotes and move them to Salt Lake in just a few weeks. Smith introduced the team to a crowd of 12,000 prospective fans at the Delta Center last week. So today in the program, we're asking how we got here and what happens now. Can Utahns support a hockey team in the big leagues? Dennis Romboy talked over the question with us this week. He's an editor and reporter for the Deseret News. And in case you're wondering, Romboy says the NHL coming here is a big deal, probably bigger than when the Jazz arrived in 1979.
The NBA was not what it is today back then.
Right.
All the sports leagues have blown up in the last 30 or 40 years. And hockey maybe is number four on that list, NFL, NBA, MLB.
Yeah.
But I think it's a big deal. I think hockey has made its presence felt. It's not just a Canadian sport. In fact, I think there are, what, half a dozen teams in Canada now is all?
25 in the U.S.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're in the South.
Right.
They're in Florida. They're in Carolina.
Yeah. Vegas.
Know, Texas, Vegas. I mean, they were in Phoenix for a long time, obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a big deal for Utah.
Would you take us through, Dennis, the story of how we got to this point? And maybe begin with the way you tell it in your writing. Utah Jazz owner Ryan Smith, he's sort of on the down low having dinner with the commissioner of the NHL, Gary Bettman, in New York. Take it from there and tell us sort of how this all happened.
Yeah, so he and Danny Ainge are in New York. They arrange a meeting with Gary Bettman, the NHL commissioner, and they have dinner at a restaurant. And this is 2 years ago.
Right.
He's kind of planting the seed that, hey, if the NHL is going to expand, we want to be in line for that. And so let's start a conversation. Gary Bettman says, here's my cell phone number. Call me. And so they start chatting over this couple of years.
So I guess they're just like, they're going back and forth. How's it going? What's happening? And then, maybe I have this wrong, Dennis, but what seems to have happened then is like the perfect storm plays out right in Arizona. They're struggling to find a new home. They're take me through that part.
Yeah. So Arizona Coyotes have been playing there since 1996.
Yeah.
An arena they played in, there was some issues there with not paying the bills. And this is the city of Glendale basically said, you guys are out. You're going to have to find a new place to play.
Yeah.
So they tried multiple times to build a new arena with public money. Those failed. But voters weren't in favor of that. So they ended up playing at Arizona State University in a 4,500-seat arena on a three-year contract, basically, while they looked for a place to build a new home.
Yeah, not ideal for a professional hockey franchise.
Yeah, exactly. But interestingly enough, that Arizona State, of all places, has a college hockey team, and they have an arena that can at least accommodate a hockey team, maybe not to NHL standards. But so they use that as a temporary home. The owner of the Coyotes is saying, hey, we're going to find a place. And I think the NHL finally just said, you're not moving along fast enough. We need to do something. This is getting untenable in this situation. At the same time, and I don't know how calculated this was or wasn't, Ryan Smith announces in January that we've asked the NHL to initiate the expansion process.
Yeah.
And this is the first time. There's been rumblings around here that he's been after a hockey team.
Mm-hmm.
But this is really the first time publicly that's been out there. And the NHL reacted, which is interesting that they even put out a statement regarding that saying, yeah, we're aware of him. They talked about him at the All-Star game saying Salt Lake City's been very aggressive in trying to obtain a team. And he was just looking at an expansion team. And Ryan Smith was—but he was open to other possibilities too, moving a team here. He said, I'm just let the NHL figure that out.
And so, at some point, what, I guess Bettman's like, I've got Ryan Smith in my contacts. I'll call him and say, look, what about Arizona?
Yeah, so Gary Bettman, the way he tells it is, we had this situation with Arizona. We needed to resolve that.
Yeah.
Got Ryan Smith out here. He's very eager to have a team. It sounded like it just like came to him one day, like, hey, wait a minute, I think I have a solution for this. The league can take over the team, make it inactive. We can sell it to Ryan Smith. The owner of the Coyotes can hang on to the logo, the branding, the colors, and all of that, with the deal that within the next 5 years, if there's an expansion team, that he would be first in line in Arizona to get that. And so then we can basically broker the sale of the Coyotes to Ryan Smith, and they can relocate to Salt Lake City.
It's kind of remarkable how quickly things fell into place, don't you think?
Gary Bettman said he called the owner of the Coyotes, Alex Muriello, I think is his name, on March 6th. Within 6 weeks, the team is having a celebration in downtown Salt Lake City, relocated to the Delta Center.
Okay, so the team was valued the lowest in the league, valued at $500 million, $500 million. Ryan Smith puts together a package to pay 1.2. That's a lot more than that.
That makes sense. Yeah, I don't know that I can. And there are other valuations out there that had it maybe at $675 million. But yeah, in that range still. Seems like he overpaid for the team. And I was kind of trying to figure this out earlier too. If he gets an expansion team, that's $1 billion, $1.5 billion expansion fee. So
it pencils out.
Kind of pencils out. Kind of all equals out to some degree. But I mean, if you just look at it in terms of dollars, he probably overpaid for the team.
Yeah. Smith has said this. He said, "We deserve this." What does he mean by that?
That's a good question. Because I was trying to sort through that myself. We deserve this. I'm thinking he's saying that we are a city that is on par with other big league cities in the nation.
Yeah. We matter.
We're relevant.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we're an up-and-coming place. We have a great economy. We have a young population. It's a high-tech center. We've got great universities and education here. And we have one major league franchise, the Utah Jazz. You look around the country, other cities that are on the map, so to speak, maybe have multiple. Look at Denver.
Yeah.
I mean, every major sport is in Denver.
And so why can't we?
Yeah, exactly.
Do you think in some ways this has driven a lot of enterprises and projects in – I'm thinking of the Olympics and those kinds of things. Just this sense of we want people to pay attention to us, and we wonder if there's a kind of people don't.
I think Salt Lake City, Utah, I mean, I grew up here.
Yeah.
I think we've always had kind of a little bit of an inferiority complex, you know, that, gosh, we can't compete with the Denvers and the Phoenixes. And we're bigger than Boise, but, you know, not a lot, you know. So, yeah, I think that kind of feeling's been out there that, hey, look at us. We matter. We're relevant. We want to – and I don't think it's in a boastful or – way or anything like that, but we want people to recognize us. The Olympics did that to a degree.
For sure.
But it's a 17-day event.
Yep.
You know, I mean, it was awesome for those 17 days and leading up to it, but it's over at some point. With Major League Sports, you're here every day.
Yeah.
And whether it's in season or off season, they're relevant all year round now.
How much do you think this was driven by, you know, the sheer love of the sport and, you know, this base of potential hockey fans who are here that would want a team here? How much is that? And how much of it is just the capitalist part that it's good business and it could revitalize downtown? Because that seems to be a good part of the conversation.
Yeah, that was a big part of the conversation. I'm failing to see how it's going to revitalize downtown. Downtown doesn't seem to me to be in serious bad shape, you know?
It was
20 years ago when we had the world here, right?
Yeah.
And maybe it hasn't changed enough during that period of time. I mean, there's some buildings have gone up, you know, and whatnot. But
that was the reason state leaders and legislative leaders got on board was through the revitalization concept.
On board also because Ryan Smith said, hey, he was going to look south to build his stadium, right? And if the hockey team goes south, you know, the Jazz might follow.
Right.
We can't have those things not in downtown Salt Lake City. I think that's what state leaders, city leaders said. We got to figure out a way to keep them downtown. And to sweeten that a little bit, obviously there's the prospect of a sales tax increase in Salt Lake City And with Major League Baseball, there's a car rental tax, and there's a bunch of other taxes that can be imposed as well to go along to building out those projects, especially if baseball were to happen. But I haven't seen the plans yet for anything for revitalization. And the only thing I know so far is that Ryan Smith wants to renovate the Delta Center to accommodate both sports.
Right.
You know, that puts 40, 50 more nights downtown for things going on, but I don't know what the revitalization part is, what's going to happen around that that's not there already.
I mean, it's much different time, but we did it in the old days in the Salt Palace. We had the Golden Eagles and we had the Utah Jazz for a while, right?
Yeah. It was a great building to watch a game. I grew up watching games there, so yeah.
Well, okay, so now to the question. Is Salt Lake a hockey town? Is Utah a hockey place? What do you remember about the Golden Eagles? And how are you thinking about this place as a hockey place? Like just personally,
just
your own experience.
Yeah, for me personally, I mean, I started going to hockey game, Golden Eagles games when I was 9 or 10 years old. And the first time I went, I was instantly in love with the sport. I knew how to skate. I've never played the game on ice. My friends and I played hockey in the streets.
Wow.
We started out with baseball bats and wiffle balls until we started buying sticks. We used to follow the equipment guy out to the trash with broken sticks after games or practice.
Wow.
And we would take the sticks home, we'd tape them up, and we'd use them for our street hockey games. So I was a big Golden Eagles fan. And even through high school, my friends and I went when the Eagles won
the Turner Cup.
We were there. It was great.
I just wondered about the kind of that era of the old International Hockey League, the IHL, and it seemed to have a kind of gutsy, charming personality.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was aware of the National Hockey League, and I watched a little bit, but my focus was on the International Hockey League and the local players. I knew all of them, you know, and we would cheer for them. And they were – it was just a gritty bunch of hockey players that we liked to watch, and I didn't care that they were AAA or AA or whatever they were. They were our team. We had Jim Craig here from the Olympic team, was a goalie for a while here in Salt Lake. And so it was just fun to follow. And the game itself is just – it's a fast-paced game. I mean, I love football too, but in a 16-minute football game, there's about 12 or 15 minutes of action.
right.
You know?
And
hockey,
all the commercial. And
hockey, there's no time – well, there's a little few timeouts, but very few timeouts. Yeah. And it's just end-to-end, back and forth. Yeah. And – it's just a fun sport to watch. And I think Salt Lake City can be a hockey town as much as Pittsburgh or Buffalo or, you know, some of these other cities that are longstanding with hockey teams.
Well, on that point, and this is something you mentioned in your article, you quoted a Utah economics professor who said that of all the NHL teams located in the U.S., six of them have smaller populations than the Salt Lake, Provo, Orem area. We're not the smallest.
We're not the smallest. I think what those was. I think Pittsburgh and Buffalo were on that list, right?
For sure, as you mentioned, Buffalo, Vegas, Columbus, Pittsburgh, Raleigh, and Vegas did pretty well.
Vegas did awesome. Yeah, they did great. You know, and they were out of the gate, Stanley Cup and finals in their first season, right?
So. Yeah.
There was some criticism, you know, still that Salt Lake's just not the big enough market to support all of this. And I guess we'll find out if it is or not.
Well, it seems like that is the question. Like, will we? But one of the things that the Deseret News did a survey, this was almost a year ago now, 43% of Utahns said they would never go to an NHL game.
Yeah. That same survey found that only 3% would buy season tickets.
And they're buying season tickets. What are we up to now? 20,000 plus?
It was like 29,000 the last I heard to put down. I think it was a $100 deposit for season tickets. I think people are excited.
Okay, let's end with what may be the most important part, the name. What's going to happen? What's the name? Any sense yet?
No sense whatsoever, other than Ryan Smith has said the fans are going to get a chance to vote on this in a bracket-style competition. That'll be fun, I think. I think, again, that's something that people will have some buy-in.
Yeah.
They want to help establish the identity of this hockey team, whether they're big fans or not. And so I think that will help build the fan base as well as letting fans get involved in that aspect of it.
Dennis Romboy, he's an editor and reporter for the Deseret News. Salt Lake a hockey town? Is Utah a hockey state? And just what does that mean anyway? Because it doesn't really matter if we are, because we've now got a professional NHL team. So today in the program, we're talking about how we got the team and what it means for, you know, the economy, the identity of the place, and whether fans will show up to watch. We spoke this week with Ian Mendez. He's a senior writer for The Athletic. He covers the NHL. What did you make of the news that professional hockey was at first, like maybe going to come to Utah, now is coming to Utah? Just to get a sense of how people outside of the state were thinking about the story of like hockey in Utah. Like what was that initial impression, do you think, from people outside?
You know what's remarkable about this, Doug, is that here we are having a conversation in the spring of 2024. And if you went back 12 months ago to the spring of 2023, I don't think Salt Lake City was on any of our radars. It was really not until June of last year in which all of a sudden Ryan Smith's name came out and the NHL said, you know, we're interested in Salt Lake. And I think the general reaction was like kind of just to whip your head to the side and say, wait, what? Did they say Salt Lake? Salt Lake in Utah?
Right.
Like, I think that was the general feeling from hockey fans. And I've been around this, covered this sport now, 20 some odd years.
Yeah.
And I feel like the list of expansion cities has always been the same. It's always been Houston and Atlanta and Quebec City. And it's almost like Salt Lake City came out of nowhere and then just had so much momentum in the last several months that it went from a curiosity to almost an inevitability in the matter of months.
Well, let's talk more about the sort of pace at which all of this happened, because you described it as frenetic. Ryan Smith somehow managed to, and whoever else was involved, of course, they managed to sort of introduce this idea, close this deal. It seems like in a just kind of an unprecedented time. Is that about right?
Yeah, I think unprecedented might be the best adjective to use, because you have to understand the complexities that are involved in closing these types of deals. Like, this isn't just like you or me buying a house and signing some papers. And, you know, closing a house is even a bit of a challenge, I think, for a lot of people in 5-6 weeks. This was transferring about 70 employees, hockey players, coaches, whatever, transferring them from Arizona to Salt Lake and then trying to figure out, like, you know, what's the value of them. And, you know, Ryan Smith even made a joke, Doug, in the press conference he had with NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman, in which Ryan joked, you know, we were arguing that we wanted the skate sharpeners thrown in. Like, I think that just shows you what type of challenges they had when trying to close this deal. Like, who is getting all the equipment? How is this all going to play out? So to be able to do this in 5 weeks, I'll give you a great example. Like, so I live in Ottawa in Canada.
Right.
And the NHL team here was for sale last year. It took from the time that they announced the team was for sale, which was November of 2022, that transaction did not close, Doug, for 10 months. Wow. 10 months. Now, that was probably a bit on the far side, but that just, I hope, gives listeners an understanding or a frame of reference that these things don't happen overnight, and the sale or the transferring of Arizona to Utah really did. And so this was I think there's a great long-form article or a mini documentary or something to be done down the road of the 35 or 40 days. How on earth did they hammer this out? Because I'd love to get to the backstory of that.
Well, one of the things you've written about is that Smith's, his approach in this public campaign, as soon as he thinks it's safe, like I think it was in January, he goes public in this letter. I think you called it in some of your writing, like this kind of bold strategy. Is it because Smith sort of went for it in some way?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think what happened was the situation in Arizona in which they were playing in a tiny college-sized rink and really not able to see a definitive future for building a stadium in the next 3, 4, 5 years, it simply became untenable. And I think as the league started to look around, and as I mentioned, you've always heard Atlanta, Houston, Quebec City, you know, all these other cities. Well, they've all been kind of sitting there, but Ryan Smith was like the one at the back of the classroom emphatically putting his hand up saying, ooh, 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 I have the answer. I have the answer right here. Look at me. Look at me. Pick me. And on January the 24th, when he put that letter out into the public realm saying, we are ready to host an NHL team as early as next season. To me, that was an absolute kind of a, hey, we're gonna shoot our shot here.
Yeah.
And if it falls short, it falls short. But we want everybody to know that we're serious. We are absolutely serious about this. This isn't a publicity stunt. This isn't, you know, trying to seek attention. This is we're ready, and we want to signal to the world that we're ready. So it was, in my opinion, a very bold move because you didn't see Atlanta do that. You didn't see Houston or Quebec City. You only saw one city sort of raise their hand emphatically and say, we're ready to host an NHL team next year, and it was Salt Lake City.
So we need to get to the kind of inevitable question of whether or not Salt Lake is a hockey town. Is Utah a hockey place? And before we get there, though, I kind of want to ask you, like, what does that even mean? Because it seems like there were, you know, the kind of old school hockey towns and then there's the new ones. Like the old ones, I don't know, were in Canada and in the Northeast. You know, they were working class and the new ones are different in some way. They're, you know, in Vegas and Seattle and like so how are you thinking about what that means to be a, you know, a hockey town?
Yeah, it's such a great point that you make, because if you go back to the origins of the National Hockey League about a century ago, and you think about the American cities they were in, it was Detroit and Chicago and New York and Boston. And if you think historically, you know, hockey has been confined to the north of the United States, right? For the most part, when you think of the great players that are produced, you think of the state of Massachusetts or Michigan or Minnesota, or, you know, it's kind of been that way for decades. But there's been a slow shift. And really, what we've seen in the last 25 years, 30 years, is that the idea or the notion that hockey only works in these sort of Rust Belt or Northeast cities in the United States, I think is erroneous. I mean, Nashville. Who would have thought Nashville is a great hockey market?
Right.
But they are. Raleigh, North Carolina. They're selling out every night and have been for 4 or 5 years in a row. Tampa Bay is a great market. They sell out. And so the only way to truly grow a sport, I think, is to go to places where traditionally it's not been. And we've seen great success in Seattle. We've seen like almost unbelievable success in Vegas.
Right.
And so to me, if you can make hockey work in Vegas, then I defy you to show me a place where it wouldn't work. And so Salt Lake, there is a history of hockey in your community. There is, you know, the Golden Eagles that played there from the late 60s into the 90s. You've hosted the Winter Olympic Games and had hockey tournaments there. It's ready. And because the Jazz are so well supported in that market, I think it offers a template into, okay, well, if the Jazz can sell out 289 straight games at the Delta Center, I suspect an NHL team will do just fine there.
Let's talk about the team. You say this is a chance for them to turn the page. Talk a little bit about the team and where they are now that they've arrived here. Because one of the things you've written about is like when they first emerged on the scene, like they were good. It seemed everyone was kind of talking about them. They made the playoffs in those first years. And then things didn't go so well. It's sort of been this, I don't know, steady decline. There have been moments. But talk about like what's the condition of the actual like the quality of the team right now?
Well, here's the problem, or here has been the problem for the team formerly known as the Arizona Coyotes, which are now going to play out of Salt Lake and out of Utah next season. And that is, they have been the victim, in my opinion, of instability. And it doesn't matter what sport. There are two things that I believe are crucial, two crucial ingredients to make a successful sports franchise. And this isn't just for the NHL. This is Major League Baseball and the NFL, the NBA. You need great, sort of solid, reliable ownership, and you need a stadium to play in. If you have those two things, more often than not, you're going to thrive. You're going to put your players in a position to be successful. When you don't have one of those things, it makes it hard. When you don't have both of those things, it makes it impossible. And that's really what that's been the story of the Arizona Coyotes, Doug, for the last 10, 15 years. They've had three or four ownership groups in the 21st century. They've played in multiple arenas. They almost have like a nomadic feel to them, right, where you don't know. For the last few years, we didn't know where they were going to end up. And so I think that has had a trickle-down effect onto the players. I don't think it's a coincidence that this season, for example, they were sitting in a playoff spot in January. And then guess what happened at the end of January? All of a sudden, the rumors started to pop up that they might not be staying and that maybe Utah was interested in them. And they lost something like 12 of 13 games. Yeah. And I think after the fact, a lot of the players and the coaches would at least look in hindsight and say, you know what? That was a distraction. That is been weighing on us. And it's only human nature. I think it doesn't matter where you work. If you have uncertainty about your company existing as it does today, 6 months from now, you're going to have a little bit of anxiety that you take into the workplace. And especially when you play in a performance-based sport like hockey, it's going to come out onto the ice. So I think they're in Utah now, or they're going to be moving to Utah. The players got a tour of the city. They got a chance to meet Ryan and Ashley Smith. And I think that the message is, okay, we can exhale. There's like a legitimate owner here with deep pockets. There's a legitimate arena we can play in. There's a plan for an arena and renovations down the road. And I think you're going to see some of that stability sort of translated onto the ice next season.
So you wrote about the 1,000 or so fans, a lot of them hockey kids who showed up at the airport to welcome the new team. You described it as the kind of this, they were sort of riding this, you described it as this roasty energy. Season tickets, I don't know where they are now, but people have placed a deposit for season tickets. That's like 29,000 people have. So what do you make of the kind of, clearly there's going to be an emotional reaction right at front. People are going to be super excited. And that seems to be so, right? But then at what point do you know, oh, this is going to take? Maybe when you lose a few seasons, or like how do you talk about the way a fan connects to a team? Is it all dependent on winning? Is it like how does it work, that part?
Yeah, and it's a great question, right? Because in a sport like the NHL, in which you have 32 teams, well, you can't have 32 winning teams, right? Like, just by the very function of the sport, half of your teams are going to be winners and half of them are going to be losers. So what makes it so that those 16 losing teams can gain traction in their marketplace? And really, what's going to happen for Utah to start is there's going to be that honeymoon period. Now, we can say it'll be 18 months. We can say it'll be 2 years. But I would say for sure you probably get a two-year grace period where they could come in, they could struggle. But people, there'll be a curiosity factor in the marketplace. Hey, what's this? What's this NHL? Have you been to a game? Let's go to a game. Let's check it out. And so those first couple of years, I don't think you'll have a problem selling a ticket. I don't think you'll have a problem hearing about them or talking about them and all the exposure stuff. At some point, there's a shift. And, the team needs to now attract fans in a more sort of aggressive and organic manner. And that's winning. And so, what they have going for them is the idea, though, that down the road, they are planning on revamping the Delta Center or having a new place where they can, watch hockey with 17,000 fans in the heart of Salt Lake City. Yeah. That's going to help, too. Like, people, at some point, in 3 or 4 years, people are also going to say, wow, I really want to check out the new building. I want to see what it's like for hockey and all of that. So you're going to have a little bit of a grace period. But really, there's a connectivity that has to happen between the fans and the players. And that's going to be the challenge. Can you get the players invested in the community? Can you get them going and helping launch youth hockey programs? Like that, that's a big part of it, is connecting the youth. What you really want to do is get those kids that are in elementary school right now in the first, second, third grade. You want to get them in the next couple of years. You want to have your players go to elementary schools so that when the kids go home from school, they say, hey, mom, hey, dad, this NHL player came and he was really cool and I want to catch a game. And you got to hook them. And you have to sort of get them emotionally attached. And so really, if you can do that for a generation, and that's probably 15 years.
Yeah.
And then once those kids grow up and they're able to buy tickets, and that's when you start to have traction. But it usually takes 15, 20, 25 years to get that second generation going of fans that start to buy tickets and things of that nature.
So you're saying hockey is a sport that fans can come to later in their lives, even if like they had no connection to the sport, didn't watch it, never played it, they can come to be passionate about hockey under the right conditions. And it kind of leads me to this question, like, what is it that you love about this sport?
Yeah, and so it's funny, right? Because I think, and I've grown up most of my life, I spent most of my life in Canada.
Yeah.
And we don't even think about it up here.
Right.
It's just second nature. Like,
yeah.
It's hockey. Like we don't even think about it. I think the appealing factor, and it's a niche sport in the United States. There's no denying it. Look at the television metrics. Look at any metric you want. It is not in the same class as the NFL. It is not in the same class as the NBA, Major League Baseball. And a lot of people would argue it's behind college sports and maybe on par with Major League Soccer. But it's a niche sport that has a really unique appeal. And the unique appeal is this is on a completely different playing surface. You know, all of those, like baseball, football, it's on grass or artificial turf. And the NBA is on a hardwood. There's only one sport that moves at the speed of hockey. And there is a violence factor that I think used to be very appealing for people. I think we've smartened up now when it comes to concussions and understanding long-term effects of it. But there is still an undeniable sort of visceral reaction people get when there's a fight,
right,
when there's a big hit.
Yeah.
And you don't see that in every other sport. You don't see the type of physicality and speed that you see in the NHL. So it can be a very visually appealing sport. And it's fairly simple to understand, whereas I think if you took an average adult, say, that had never watched a football game, and you tried to explain to them football, it would take you a long time. You would have to try and explain that there's four downs, and each down you have an opportunity to go 10 yards, and you have to explain all these things. Hockey, it's very simple. See that little black puck on the ice? That team has to put it into the net, and the other team's trying to keep it out, and they're trying to score. That's it. There's nuances to the game, of course, and little rules, but it's a very easy sport to explain. And I think it's a sport that actually does better in person, where on television, I don't know that it translates as well, but boy, when you go to watch a hockey game, it could be an electric atmosphere.
So in their final moments playing in Arizona, the Coyotes, a chant broke out. Salt Lake sucks. Salt Lake sucks. Salt Lake sucks. So let me ask you, how are you feeling about the fans in Arizona? I mean, who are gutted now because their team is gone.
There is nothing more hurtful than losing your professional sports franchise. You could talk to people that are far older than us that lived through the Brooklyn Dodgers leaving their borough in the 1950s. And it was catastrophic because they were woven into the community. And so I understand they're channeling their anger at Salt Lake in Arizona but they would be yelling Houston sucks.
Right.
Houston sucks.
Yeah.
And it's not, it, you know, don't take it personally.
Right.
They're just looking at for somebody to express their anger to because they are a forgotten market in the NHL. They've been low-hanging fruit for a lot of jokes and punchlines about attendance. But I'll say this. One of the best players in the NHL today is a guy by the name of Austin Matthews. And he scored 69 goals for the Toronto Maple Leafs this season. Austin Matthews was born and raised in Arizona.
Hmm.
And Austin Matthews, I can guarantee you, doesn't become a generational NHL superstar without an NHL team in his hometown while he was growing up. And I think that's the part that really hurts, is you worry that it's going to lose traction with the kids, that you're not going to produce another Austin Matthews, that you're going to lose the momentum. And that's the stuff that hurts. So I feel for the Arizona fans, and the only faint glimmer of hope you can hang your head on is that the NHL has promised them that if they get their financial house in order and they get a new arena, they'll have their team back in 5 years. And that's not a promise that I think anybody else has ever really had.
Let me ask you one more thing. I was struck by how much a sports team connecting to a community is about hope. Because you write that the Coyotes, that team, they were feeling abandoned and neglected. But right now, since they've, you know, had that visit to Salt Lake, they had that welcome. I'm sure they're seeing the news about the season ticket interest, all that stuff, that they're feeling a real sense of hope. And one of the things you wrote about was that the head coach, Andre Tourigny, said that he had been in the NHL for like 7 years. And
yeah.
I guess he told his wife that when he came here, it was the best day in the NHL for him so far. That says something. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does. And think about that. It's a guy that has been to the playoffs and he's been in packed arenas. And he's saying the day that that charter airline door popped open and I saw those kids and I saw the reaction for us, that's my best day in the NHL. And there's a couple of other players there. That I think Alex Kerfoot was another one who said, this is one of the best experiences I've ever had in the NHL. And so it's almost like the players from Arizona were suffering from a little bit of a case of whiplash. Like, I'm not sure you could have such a sudden change to go from a market where you felt like your owner was alienating you and the community didn't want to find a place for you to play. And then you turn your head and now you're in your new setting and they want you to play and they want you to feel welcomed and they want to do everything to help you out. I think that they were speaking as much about how much they love Utah, but the juxtaposition of what they just dealt with in Arizona, I think, was very much on their minds. And they didn't want to take any shots at Arizona. I don't think they wanted to say anything negative or mean about the fans, about the city. But I think it was very clear when you come out and say, this is my best day in the NHL. Well, what are you measuring that against? You're measuring it against a very negative experience that you're just coming out of. And so I thought those were very telling comments from the coaches and players.
Ian Mendez, thank you very much.
Hey, thanks so much for having me, Doc. Have a great day.
Ian Mendez, he's a senior writer for The Athletic. Radio West is a production of KUER. You can subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts, and you can email us with questions or comments or ideas at radiowest@kuer.org. The program is produced by Benjamin Bombard and Tim Slover. Carrie Watson is our executive producer. I'm Doug Fabrizio.